Okay, so this shiur is from Tisha B'Av to Tu B'Av, from the 9th of Av to the 15th, from mourning to rejoicing. It was inspired by the title of something I saw on a Lubavitch leaflet several years ago, but I couldn't find that again or what they said, so I've made up the rest myself. I'm going to talk about the relationship between Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Av. Probably Tu B'Av gets a little bit ignored in the Jewish calendar. Not really anything exciting happening. You don't say Tachanun, and they have a party on Tel Aviv Beach. But apart from that, there's not really anything. So let's try and find out what really is going on there. The Mishnah in Tainis says, Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, source number one, Lo hayu yamim tovim liYisrael kechamisha asar ba'av v'kiyom kippurim. There were no happier days for the Jewish people than the 15th of Av and Yom HaKippurim. Nowadays, we don't really think of Yom Kippur as a happy day either, but that's beside the point. Shebehen benot Yerushalayim yotzot b'kli lavan shu'alin, because on those days, the women of Jerusalem, the single women of Jerusalem, used to go out wearing borrowed white clothing, shelo vayesh mi she'ein lo, so that nobody would be embarrassed because their wardrobe wasn't up to scratch with other people. She'ein lo kol hakelim to'onim tevila, fine, because of laws of Tumah Tara, they had to assume they were all Tami and Tovel, all of them, so as not to embarrass anybody. Ubinot Yerushalayim yotzot v'chulot b'kramim, and the women of Jerusalem used to go and dance in the vineyards. And this was much easier than having a shidduch committee. People could just go, and the men would go and choose which woman they wanted, and everyone would have their own logo, catchphrase as to what to say. So because these were such happy days, these were good days for Shidduchim, everyone's in a good mood, everyone's happy, but why are they such happy days? So source number three, I say the Gemara says in source number three, Bishlami Yom Kippurim, Mishum De'is Be'islichu Mechila. So I understand why Yom Kippur is a happy day, because it's a day of atonement, forgiveness. There's no more happy thing than starting with a clean slate. And also, Yom Shenitna Bo Luchot HaRachronot. It's the day that the second set of tablets were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. He went up on Shavuos to get the first set of tablets, came down on the 17th of Tammuz, smashed the first Luchos, went back up again, came down on Rosh Chodesh Elul, went back up again, and came down on Yom Kippur with the second set of tablets. And of course, we know Parshas Yisro talks about everything that happened after that, and that's when they could get on with learning the halachas. So it's both a day of forgiveness and a day of Kabbalah Satorah, so of course we're happy. Very nice. Ela Tu B'Av Maihi. Why are we so happy on Tu B'Av? So before we go into why we're so happy on Tu B'Av, I want to go back to source number two and see why we are sad on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, of course, is the saddest day of the calendar, saddest day of the year. And the reason for that says the Mishnah is Chamisha Dvarim Iru Savotenu B'Shivasa B'Tammuz V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av. Five tragedies happened on the 17th of Tammuz, and five tragedies happened on the 9th of Av. Nowadays in our calendar, we call the time in between the two the 3 weeks, and make a connection between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. In fact, this is historically, or at least the events that happen, there's no connection between the two. Right, they each commemorate different things that happen at different times and are independent festivals, but we've extended the mourning period, which is really should be from Rosh Chodesh Av, we've extended it back to the 17th of Tammuz and made a link between them at least Ashkenazim have, for various later historical reasons. So what happened on Tisha B'Av? But Tisha B'Av nigzar al avosenu shelo yikansu la'aretz. On the 9th of Av, the spies came back with their report about Eretz Yisrael. Moshe had sent spies. They came back. They said, there's no way we can conquer this land. The people, the inhabitants of the land, are not only mightier than us, but mightier than God as well. So the people sat and cried. And because they cried, God decreed that they would not go into Eretz Yisrael. So that was the first tragedy. We didn't come into Eretz Yisrael. We had to wander around in the desert for 40 years. V'charav habayis b'rishona uv'shniyah, and both the first and the second temples were destroyed on this date of the 9th of Av, several centuries apart, obviously, but both on the same date. The truth is the second temple was really mainly destroyed on the 10th of Av, but they set fire on the 9th of Av, and therefore we make the tragedies match up. Vanilkada Beitar and Beitar, which had been the fortress of Bar Kokhba, who was supposed to be the Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva was the armor bearer of Bar Kokhba and used to greet him as Melech Mashiach. Bar Kokhba reinstated after the Romans had destroyed Jerusalem and destroyed any kind of Jewish authority in Israel. Bar Kokhba came, reestablished the monarchy, minted money, even controlled Jerusalem for a short while, retreated to Beitar, which was his fortress, his main fortress, and eventually, after a siege lasting many years, Beitar was conquered and the Romans killed everybody there. And the Gemara in Gittin talks about the horrendous numbers of people who were massacred on that day. And worse than that, the Romans did not allow the bodies to be buried. They wanted to make an example of Bar Kokhba to prevent any future rebellions, and therefore they piled up the bodies around the city like a fence, and they were there for several years. V'nechrasha ha'ir, and the city of Yerushalayim was plowed over. Not only was the temple destroyed and any vestiges of Jewish authority or leadership in Yerushalayim taken away, but they also plowed the city over to ensure that the Jews would not be able to rebuild the temple, and there was not even any remnant of the temple, except of course the Kotel HaMaarvi somehow remained there. So five tragedies happened on Tisha B'Av, and I think it's no coincidence that five happy things happened on Tu B'Av. I say five because it's really six, but we'll round up or down or whatever. So at the end, in source number three, at the end of the first line, it says Tu B'Av Maihi. What happened on Tu B'Av? Why is that such a happy day? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Yom Shehutru Shvatim Lavo Zeh B'Zeh. This was the day that the tribes were permitted to intermarry. The end of last week's parsha, the family of the tribe of Manasseh came and said that Benos Slofchad, who had inherited their father's portion in Eretz, were going to inherit their father's portion in Eretz Israel. The problem would be if they then married people from different tribes, then that piece of ancestral land would pass to a different tribe, and every year in the Yovel it would go back to a different tribe. So they came to Moshe and asked, how can we ensure that our tribe keeps this land? And Moshe asked God, that they had to make sure they married people from the same tribe, and in fact each of the five of Slofchad's daughters married their cousins. But it seems, although there's no clear mention of this elsewhere, it seems that they kept this minhag of always marrying within the same tribe to avoid land moving through women. Hello, spider. To avoid land moving from one tribe to another. They retained this minhag for a long time, which on the one hand sounds like a good thing. You have different communities, different tribes, different people doing different things. But on Tu B'Av, they made a ruling that the tribes were permitted to intermarry with each other. And we'll see why that's a happy thing in a minute. That was reason number one, in no particular order. Second reason, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shehut Hashevet Binyamin Lavo B'Kahal. This was the day that the tribe of Binyamin was permitted to marry back into the rest of Klal Yisrael. If you remember, at the end of Sefer Shoftim, the truth is historically this happened at the beginning of Shoftim, but if they would have put this at the beginning, everyone would have been so put off and not read the rest of the book. So they waited till the end and put the two worst stories in Shoftim all the way at the end. So the story of Pilegesh Begiva. Pilegesh Begiva is the story of a man whose concubine ran away back to her father's house in Binyamin, and he went to try and bring her back, and the whole story, and eventually she agreed to come back with him, and on the way back they stayed the night in a place in Binyamin, and the hotel they were staying in said, there's no room for your concubine, she's got to sleep outside. And so she slept outside, and she was raped and murdered, and all sorts of horrible things happened. And in the morning, this poor chap woke up and found that his concubine was no more. So he cut her body up into 12 pieces and sent her to all the 12 different tribes and said, look what happens in Binyamin, look how they treat guests over here in the Shevet, let's do something about it, which caused a major, major civil war. in which the tribe of Benjamin was almost entirely wiped out, and the other Shvatim also suffered heavy casualties. I'm not sure it was the first civil war, because perhaps Levi fighting against the other tribes at the time of the Eglat Zav, but it was a major, major destruction in Klal Yisrael, and they made a decree that the people from Benjamin would not be able to marry into the other tribes because of this horrible, despicable act that had happened. And Benjamin just about was destroyed entirely, and then they found a loophole and they made a way that they could in fact remarry. So this also happened on Tu B'Av, that Benjamin was allowed to marry back into the rest of Klal Yisrael, which saved them as a tribe, and not only saved them, but ultimately the 10 tribes were taken away in captivity and either lost or will be returned, or Yirmiyahu brought them back or whatever happened. But Binyamin and Yehuda were the two Shvatim, along with Levi, the two Shvatim who remained longest of all of them. Fine, so either it's the day the Shvatim were able to intermarry, or when Binyamin was able to remarry within Klal Yisrael. Rabba Bar Bar Chana in the second line says, Am Rabbi Yochanan Yom Shekalu by Masei Midbar. This was the day that the 40 years in the desert, people used to die on Tisha B'Av, and on the 15th of Av was the day they stopped dying. Now there's a machlokas Rashi in Tosfos over here. Rashi says that every year, quotes a midrash, every year on the 9th of Av, everybody used to dig a grave and lie down in it, and in the morning someone would come round, I guess the town crier would come round ringing a bell or whatever and saying, right, anyone who's still alive, please get up again. And some did and some didn't. So in the 40th year, they dug their graves on the 9th of Av, and they came around the next morning, and everybody got up. Thought, well, we must have made a mistake. This can't be right. This never happened before. So they checked their watches and their diaries and their calendars, and they decided to try again the next night. So they went back to sleep the next night in their graves, and again everybody woke up. They did this over and over again. When they got to Tu B'Av, they saw the full moon. They realized definitely Tisha B'Av had passed, and therefore they realized that nobody was going to die in the desert anymore, and they're all going to be going into Eretz Israel. Tosfos says, gives actually three explanations. It gives first that explanation and two others, but the third explanation of Tosfos is that people died every day of the year when they were in the desert. It was not a miraculous life in that sense. People got old, they died, or when they turned 60, they died. But Tisha B'Av was a day that more people died than any other day of the year. But they died every day. Tu B'Av was the first day in 40 years that nobody died. And that's what it means. Kalu Mesi Midbar. It fits better with the words. And Rashi's explanation wasn't they stopped dying then, so they realized they'd stopped dying then. But according to Tosfos, that was the first day that nobody died. So also a happy day because nobody died in the desert. Ula Amar Yom Shebitel Hosher Ben Ala Prusdiyot Shehushav Yeravim Ben Nevat Al Drachim Shlo Yalu Yisrael Leregel. This was the day that they removed, right? Yeravim Ben Nevat, who was, after Shlomo Melech died, the kingdom was divided between Yeravam and Rechavam. Rechavam took the southern kingdom. Yeravam took the northern kingdom. Yeravam was worried. There's a halacha that in the Beis HaMikdash, only Malchei Beis David, only kings who are descended from David are allowed to sit down. He said, if people come from the northern kingdom and see me standing and Rechavam sitting, they'll realize I'm not a real king and I'll lose my kingdom. So therefore, he set up golden calves in Beit El, and in the north in Dan, and he put up roadblocks and forbade anybody to go to Yerushalayim Aliyah LeRegel, told them all to come to see his place instead, and he made his own rules in order to preserve his kingship. So they removed those roadblocks on Tu B'Av. Also, another day, they announced, V'amar le'ezer sh'yirtze ya'alu, anyone who wants can go to Yerushalayim. Rav Masna Amar Yom Shenatna Haruge Beit HaLikvura. This was the day that those who were killed in Beit Har, their bodies were stacked around the city. So I think 4 years later, this was the day that they were permitted to bury those corpses. And the Gemara says, because of this miracle that happened, that there are two miracles that happened. One is that they were permitted to bury the dead, and secondly, that none of the corpses had decayed in all those years and were still intact. So because of this, we recite the fourth blessing in Birkas HaMazon, Hatov V'Hametiv, Hatov, that they were given for burial, V'Hametiv, that the bodies didn't decompose. So that also happened on Tu B'Av. Rabbi Rav Yosef, Damri Tarveu, Yom Shepasku, Melechrot Eitzim Lemaracha. This was the day that they stopped cutting wood for the Beis HaMikdash. The maracha is the pyre of wood on the altar. The halacha is if there were any worms in the wood, it couldn't be used for the mizbeach. It wasn't appropriate to put on the altar. So they used to, one of the jobs of the kohanim was to check all of the wood for worms. After Tu B'Av, the sap comes into the trees, get damp, there's more worms, they can't check them. So they said, after Tu B'Av, we don't accept any more wood, only what we've stockpiled during the summer months. Okay. So, those are the five, six reasons that we rejoice on Tu B'Av. You'll notice that none of them apply nowadays. These are all events that happened in the past, so what is their relevance for us today? Which is what I'd really like to talk about. Before we do that, let's talk about what it means that they cried on Tisha B'Av. Right. The Chumash says, Vatisa kol ha'eda, all of the congregation raised their voices. Vayitnu et kolam, they cried out. Vayivku ha'am, and they cried. Balaila hahu, on that night. Now, I've got a problem with that. Because I've seen on the bottles of Yarden wine, is it Yarden? Carmel wine, with the spies carrying the big bunches of grapes. Clearly, the spies must have come back during the daytime. Because how could they have showed off the fruits that they brought from Eretz Yisrael? How could they have had a public gathering if it was the middle of the night? Right? It also says, B'sofar ba'im yom, 40 days, they must have come back during the daytime, because Moshe sent them in the daytime, and they must have come back exactly 40 days later. So if they came back during the day, why are the Jews crying at night? Okay, Ramban also thought of this question. I'm not the first one. Ramban says, in source number 5, Ki la'is erev ba'al meraglim, it must be that the meraglim came back in the late afternoon. Like they left late afternoon. That also doesn't make sense to me that they left late in the afternoon. If you're sending off spies, publicly sending off spies, I'm not worried, I'm not talking about guys sneaking in when no one's looking, like Yeshua did, but with Moshe, sending them off publicly, it would have been first thing in the morning, I would have thought. But he says they were sent in the afternoon and they came back in the afternoon. Ubaboker, Hishkimu Vialinu Kulam al Moshe Varon, and they cried all night. In the morning, the people got up and complained about Moshe and Aaron. Okay, fine. So it just happened to be that the time they were crying was the night time. Notwithstanding the Ramban, and I didn't see anybody else who said any other explanation of this, I would like to suggest something different than the Ramban, or complementary to the Ramban. That there's a reason that the Torah describes this as crying at night. Because nighttime means, apart from the hours of darkness, nighttime represents something. Crying at night represents a particular kind of crying. It's a crying of despair. It's a crying of not being able to see a future. During the daytime, you can see what's in front of you. You can see what you've got ahead of you. You can see where you're going. At nighttime, unless the streetlights are working properly, you don't know where you're going. You can't see what's going to be. You've no idea where you are. So I think that the crying of the Jewish people was a crying of frustration that we've been heading to Eretz Yisrael. That was the plan. We knew where we're going. Now we can't go there. We see no future. That's what it means to cry at night. It may be, and it probably is, that it also happened to be nighttime. I accept that. But I think that the Torah tells us that to tell us that the type of crying they were doing was a crying that's relevant at night. And the Gemara says, in source number 6, Amar Rabba, Amar Yochanan, Osa Laila Leil Tisha B'Av Haya. That night was the night of the ninth of Av. Amar Lema Kodesh Baruch Hu, God said to the Jewish people, Atem Bechisim Bechir Shalchinam, you've cried tonight for no reason at all. Vani kaveh lachem b'chiyah ledorot. So I'm going to make this a day for you to cry, a date for you to cry for all future generations. Interesting to note, I think everyone says this, but interesting to note that the reason that the normal way of looking at things is that on Tisha B'Av we sit on the floor and cry because of the mourning of the terrible tragedies that happened. But this Gemara turns it on its head and says the reason the terrible tragedies happened is because we sat on the floor and cried. Putting the cart before the horse. It's the crying which caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we're crying to fix that, to cry for the proper reasons, to undo the damage that was done by that original crying. Now, is there a common theme? Is there a common theme to the six things that happened on Tu B'Av? And is there a common theme to the things that happened on Tisha B'Av? So I think the first common theme of Tisha B'Av, as this Gemara just said, is that the reason these tragedies happened is because they cried in the desert with the Meraglim. That's the reason that it was decreed they wouldn't come into Eretz Yisrael. That's the reason, ultimately, for the destruction of the first and second temples. That's the reason that Beitar fell, and that's the reason that the city was ploughed. And I would suggest that the reason they were crying at night was because they couldn't see a future. These were all calamities for the Jewish people, where they reached a point in history where they said, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't see a way forward. We can't see an end to this. And therefore, that's one of the common themes of all the things of Tisha B'Av, the crying. What about Tu B'Av, all the happy things? So there's another reason the Gemara says, or at least connected to the ceasing of cutting the wood. Why was that a good thing? They stopped cutting the wood for the Maracha. Okay, so the wood cutters, you know, got a holiday. But Amar, source number 7, Amar of Menashe, V'karule Yom Tavar Magal. They called this day of Tu B'Av the day that they broke the sickle. Means they put down their tools. Why is that a good thing? Because mikan ve'elech ha-moisif yasif. V'delay moisif yasif. Now you know this from Pirkei Avos. I think Hillel says this in Pirkei Avos. But from now on, from Tu B'Av, those who add will have life added to them, and those who don't add will die. What does that mean? Rashi explains, mikan ve'elech, from Tu B'Av and onwards. Rashi says in source number 8, "Mechamisha asar ba'av ve'elech, demosif leilot al hayamim la'asok b'torah." That's when the nights are longer than the days. It's approximately the autumnal equinox, where the nights are longer than the days, and therefore, approximately, demosif leilot al hayamim la'asok b'torah. And now you've got more time to learn Torah because there's a longer night. So you can learn more Torah. So therefore, Yosef Chaim al Chayav, by learning Torah at night, a person adds years to their life. Delay Yosef, somebody who doesn't add Lasok B'Torah B'Leilot, to learn Torah at night, right, will not have such a happy ending. It's a rather strange thing. I suppose the simple understanding would be that people are working all day long, so the only time they have to learn Torah is at night. Okay, that's the simple explanation. But I would have thought, it's because I live in a society in a time in history when many people don't work all the way from daybreak till dusk and till night, and they have time to learn during the day as well. Why would it be a better thing for people to be learning at night than to be learning during the day? Right? The night seems very strange over here. This is particularly, from now on, the nights are longer, you've got more time to learn at night. So what does it mean to learn Torah at night? We'll see over the page, hopefully. I think the underlying reason of all of the things of Tu B'Av and the relevant reason for us today in Tu B'Av is that this is the time when we can learn more Torah, nighttime Torah. I think that whatever the things are, the common denominator of all of the good things that happened on Tu B'Av are connected to this idea, whatever it means. And the message for us, again, is that the Torah of nighttime is something that from Tu B'Av onwards we have greater access to. The Gemara Nedarim says, again, very famous, especially this time of year, an idea about the underlying reason for the tragedy of Tisha B'Av. It's talking primarily about the first base of Megiddo, but I'm going to cheat and pretend that it underlies the entire reason of Tisha B'Av, which I think is not entirely unreasonable. Damarav Yehuda, Amarav, my dechtiv, what does the pasuk mean? Miyei shachacham v'yavin etzot. Right? Who is the wise man who can understand this? What is the this that can be understood, that can't be understood? Davazia nishalachachamim nevi'im V'loi pirshua. They asked, I'm not sure who the they is, but they asked the Chachamim, they asked the prophets and the Vi'im, and no one could explain it. Ad shepirshua HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'atzma, until God himself explained. V'chiv, v'yomer Hashem al azvam es tarasi. Why was the land destroyed? Why were the Jews exiled from Eretz Yisrael? Because God says, al azvam es tarasi, because they abandoned my Torah. So what does that mean? They abandoned my Torah. Haynu lo shamu b'kol'i. Haynu lo yalchu ba. We already know that they didn't listen to the Torah. They didn't keep the mitzvahs. So what is it? They didn't learn Torah. Amar Rav Yehuda. Amar Rav she'ein mevachim b'torah tchila. They did learn Torah, but they forgot to make a bracha before they started learning Torah. So normally people understand this to mean that they were learning Torah as if it was an academic subject and it wasn't relevant to their lives. They weren't learning yeshiva. This is like yeshiva before. They weren't learning yeshiva, they were learning at university. Right? Rashi says not like that at all. Rashi says that they were so comfortable with Torah, everybody was learning Torah, that's what everyone did, that they didn't think there was it wasn't important to make a bracha. That's just they woke up in the morning and started learning Torah. And didn't bother with the brachas first. So it was kind of the opposite of, they were so immersed in the yeshiva lifestyle that they forgot to make the brachas. That's how Rashi learns this Gemara. I'd like to suggest a different explanation in a minute. And source number 10, I'm actually not going to read it inside, you have to trust me on that. But one of the prohibitions on Tisha B'Av is a prohibition in learning Torah. We can't learn Torah because it makes us happy. Of course, the Gemara then says that even the kids in school aren't allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, and all of the commentaries ask, but kids don't like learning Torah. Why they should? For them, they'd be suffering if you made them learn Torah. Give them an extra day of school, but they get the day off. Okay. So we see that Tisha B'Av, whatever is the message of Tisha B'Av, it's the opposite of learning Torah properly. Because we're not allowed to learn Torah in Tisha B'Av. Shlach and Avos not allowed to learn Torah. So I made a chart on page number 2. If you just flip it over and it's upside down, but you'll figure it out. If you're Australian, it will help. There's a very clear parallelism between the five tragedies of Tisha B'Av and the five happy things of Tu B'Av, except that I made two mistakes in this chart. So you'll have to get your pens out and correct it. First of all, Tisha B'Av was the day that, in line number 1, Tisha B'Av was the day that the Jews were decreed that they couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. So that clearly parallels on Tu B'Av, right, that they stopped dying in the desert on Tu B'Av. They used to die on Tisha B'Av because of this decree. They used to stop dying because of Tu B'Av. Now, I'd like to switch around these two tribes intermarrying. There's tribes intermarrying and tribe Binyamin intermarrying. The first base of Migdash was destroyed because of Gidei Urias, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah. Because of idolatry, illicit relations, and murder. The tribe of Binyamin, right, switching these around, was not allowed to marry into the rest of the Jewish people because of Pelegish Begiva, which involved the sins of idolatry, illicit relations, and murder. And therefore, when they permitted the people of Binyamin to marry back into the rest of Klal Yisrael, that's in effect undoing the sins that were the same as the sins of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. What is Sinas Chinam? Everyone knows what Sinas Chinam means, right? But the Netziv, in his Hakdama to Ahemek Dava, says that Sinas Chinam is that everybody had their own Hashkafa, their own worldview, their own understanding. Everybody knew what was right, but they knew their way, and if the guy next door did it slightly differently, wore different clothes, or said different Nusach and Tefillah, or did something differently, they couldn't stand, they hated that person, right? That each group, each affiliation was so sure that theirs was the only way, the right way, that by making different groups, they divided Klal Yisrael, which was the cause of Sinas Chinam. The tribes permitting to be intermarried within each other is to take the Each tribe, which has its own hashkafa, its own affiliation, its own views, its own nusach ha'tefillah, its own sharon shemayim to daven to, and saying, don't hate each other. Yes, you're distinct groups. Yes, you have to maintain your identity. But there's no. But you can intermarry. There's a connection between you. There's no barriers or walls between. Micah.
What was the avodah zarah
The whole. I mean, the whole sefer shoftim is to do with avodah zarah, and it's right before Pesel Micha, which is avodah zarah, and the whole thing happened over there. It's a very close connection with avodah zarah. But if you don't like it, I can take it out if you want. I can live without it. So the second base of Migdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. Permitting the tribes to intermarry is the antithesis of Sinas Chinam. It's breaking down the barriers between different groups and allowing connection between them. Beitar was conquered and destroyed and massacred on Tisha B'Av. So clearly on Tu B'Av, when they were permitted to bury the dead of Beitar, we've got a parallelism. And number five, Yerushalayim was plowed over, meaning there was no way of going back to Yerushalayim. Everything was gone. And cross off completion of cutting wood, because that's really the next thing. And what I should have put there is they took down the barricades that prevented people from going to Yerushalayim on Tu B'Av. In other words, plowing Yerushalayim is stopping anyone going there. Taking down the barriers is allowing people again to go back to Yerushalayim. So that Tu B'Av is really the antidote, is really the cure for Tisha B'Av. And is where they stopped cutting the wood for the Beis HaMikdash, which allowed the longer nights to learn Torah. There's a connection between this real one idea in the Gemara, which is the antidote to the crying of nighttime and not learning Torah properly, which was the ultimate cause of the tragedies of Tisha B'Av. So what does it mean to have Torah, the night to learn Torah, which is again the not learning Torah properly and crying at night are the only parts of the Torah part is the only part of Tisha B'Av that really is directly relevant to us today. I know the Gemara says that any generation in which the temple is not rebuilt is as if it was destroyed, but it's only as if, right? All of the things, the Chsinas Chinam, all the Lashon Hara rallies, all those kinds of things we've got to try and fix, but all of those things are events that happened in the past. Right? Perhaps the thing that they didn't learn Torah the proper way with the proper bracha is something that might be relevant nowadays. And certainly, of the Tu B'Av things, those are all events in the past. But the long nights to learn Torah are still long nights to learn Torah today, as much as they were 2,000 years ago. What is the Torah of the night? So we say in the Mizmor for Shabbos, La'agid Baboker, and the Shalom Kalbach song, La'agid Baboker Chazdecha Ve'monascha Ba'Leilot. That in the morning we say, we praise God for his chesed, for his kindness, for all the wonderful things, all the nice, all the good things he does for us. V'emunascha b'leilot. At night time, we don't see God's kindness, but we have faith, we have trust, we believe that he's going to do good things for us. The emunah is even when I can't see God's kindness, even when it's dark, it's night time, I can't see what's happening, I can't see what's going to be, I can't see the future. I have trust in God, which is why we say in the brachas of the Shema in the evening, we say emes ve'emunah, that this is true, and we have faith that this is going to, that God's going to get us through the night, right? Through the night, meaning not only night time, but also the night that Elie Wiesel refers to. Learning Torah at night is a very special thing in a way that learning Torah during the day is not. The Gemara Chagiga says, in source number 12, Reish Lakish says, Kol ha'osek b'torah b'layla, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshech alav chut shel chesed b'yom. Anybody who learns Torah at night has a special thread of kindness from God the next day. There's something special about learning Torah at night. Learning Torah during the day is a great thing, fantastic, wonderful, brilliant. But learning Torah at night gives you this chut shel chesed, gives you a direct connection to God during the daytime that you wouldn't have otherwise. Maybe a pasuk to prove it. And Ikidamri in the second line, an alternative version, which is also very important. Kola osik b'torah ba'olam hazeh shu domeh l'layla. Anybody who learns Torah in this world, which is a time of night, a metaphorical night, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshech alav chut shel chesed l'olam haba. God will extend to him a thread of chesed in Olam Haba, which is a time of daytime. In other words, our life in this world is a time of confusion, is a time of darkness, is a time where we don't see what happens, in a time of exile and confusion. And if we learn Torah now, even though we can't see where we're going, in the future, when it all makes sense, God will give us a chut shel chesed. The most famous person who learned Torah at night was Yaakov Avinu. The Chumash says, Vayifka b'makom v'yalen sham kiva shemesh. Yaakov, right, sets off. Yitzchak sends him off to go get married, go find a wife. He's already 63 years old. It's time to get married. And he heads off to Padan Aram, to Laban's house. But on the way, he takes a detour, goes to visit Shem Ve'eva. It's not in the Chumash, but the years don't add up any other way. Goes to Shem Ve'eva and learns there for 14 years. And he continues on his way, comes to the base of Migdash or to Beit El, or however you work out the map. And the sun set, Vayikach me'avnei ha'makom ve'yasim ha'rashosav. He made a ring around his head with the stones. Vayishkav b'makom ahu, and he lay down, or he went to sleep, in that place. Rashi says, Vayishkav b'makom ahu, lashon miyut. That's a limitation. That means, b'oso makom shach, of that place, he lay down at night. Aval arba sar shanim sheshimesh b'beis ever, lo shachav b'layla. But for 14 years, when he was learning Torah at, it's called base Yeshiva of Ever by this time, because Shem was no longer alive, but it was set up. And above the door it said Yeshiva Shem for Ever. He didn't sleep all night. Shaya Osek B'Torah, was learning Torah all night long. Now we know, I know there were Avos and everything else, but the Gemara Nedarim says a person can't stay awake for more than 3 days at a time. It can't be that he never ever slept the whole time he was in the Yeshiva of Shem for Ever. So I think it must be that at night time he didn't sleep. That's when he was learning Torah in Shem Ve'eva. Maybe during the day he slept. I don't know how long he slept for. I don't know, prayer in morning. I don't know how he did it. But the point Rashi stresses is that he never slept at night in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'eva. Yaakov Avinu was learning the Torah of night. Whatever the Torah of night is, nighttime Torah, he was learning it at Shem Ve'eva. And this was special Torah because it was this Torah that he got from Shem Ve'eva that he taught to his son Yosef, as opposed to the other Torah he got, which he taught to his other sons. Because in source number 14, Vayisrael Ahav es Yosef mikol banav, Yisrael, that's Yaakov, loved Yosef more than all his other sons. Ki ben zikunim hulo, because he was the son of his old age. And everyone jumps up and says, no, he wasn't, Binyamin was. How can Yosef be the favorite because he's the youngest when he's not the youngest? Gotcha. Right, Vasalakhsan's Pasim, he made him a striped coat, and you've seen the movie or the stage show, whatever it was, very nice. Rashi says, Ben Zikunim, gives a couple of explanations, is Shinola Loray Zikna. So he was born when he was old, even though he wasn't the old youngest, but okay. The Unglas Tagim Bachakimhu Le explains Ziknu So not as old, but as wise. What's Zaken Ze Shekana Chokhma? The one who's acquired wisdom. So what does that mean? He was the son of the wisdom. Rashi explains, Mashal Amad Mishem Ve'eva Masalo, that Yaakov taught Yosef the Torah that he learned from Shem and Eva. Okay? So Yosef also learns the Torah of nighttime, whatever that is. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Emesli Yaakov, says, Yesh L'dagdek, Madua Davkes Torah Shem Ve'eva Masalo, why did Yaakov teach Yosef only the Torah, specifically the Torah of Shem Ve'eva? Hello, Yaakov Lamad Gamitz Avram Zikno, Yitzchak Aviv, didn't he learn Torah by Avram Avinu? Didn't he learn Torah with Yitzchak, his father, his grandfather? V'hilai Yaloi, es Torah, Sa'avas Nimsorla, couldn't he pass on the Masorah, the tradition, the heritage? Gemara says, anyone who teaches their grandchild Torah is as if they heard it from Har Sinai. I know Har Sinai hadn't happened yet, but surely you want to get the Torah from the Zedek. Gam Tzrich Lever, we also have to explain, Yaakov the what was he? Some, he didn't want to teach his other sons. He's got 12 tribes, all the future leaders of the Jewish people. Surely he wants to teach all of them the same Torah. Why is he teaching Yosef this Torah and not the other sons? Ubiyanu. Yaakov says, we explained elsewhere, Sha Torah Shoshem Ve'eva Haita Torah Miyuchedet. The Torah of Shem Ve'eva was a special Torah. It wasn't the same as the Torah of Avram and Yitzchak. It was Torah Hagalut, the Torah of exile. Why? Ki rak shem ve'eva shechayu b'doram shel reshaim gemurim, Af al pi ken, it's a mistake. We hit slichu leishar b'tzid kasam. Shem lived in the generation of the flood. The people were really, really bad, and yet he stayed committed to God, despite what was going on around him. Aver lived in the generation of the Tower of Babel, Dor HaFlaga, the time of the dispersion of all the people. Everyone was really, really bad, and yet he managed to stay firm in his faith. Shem and Aver were the ones who could withstand the pressures, the peer pressure of everybody else doing the wrong thing, and they were able to. The Torah that they had was how to stand firm in your faith in exile. Avram and Yitzchak had it easy. Right? They used to gather people around them, they'd make yeshiva, everyone was frum. Great. Shem and Aver knew how to be frum, how to learn Torah when nobody else was doing that. Right. So, Heim Eilu Sheyachim Nesmol Yaakov Ech L'chiyot Etzel Lavan HaRasha. And that's why Yaakov had to go, even though he'd spent 63 years learning Torah from Yitzchak and from Avraham. That's 15 years from Avraham. That's why he suddenly had to go and learn from Shem V'Eva before he goes to Lavan. Because now he's going into exile. Now he's not going to be living in a safe environment where everyone's doing the same thing, where everyone's putting on the Rabbeinu Tam Tefillah. Now he's going to go and live with a guy who's a cheat and a liar and a rotten, dirty scoundrel. So he goes to Shem V'Eva to learn the Torah of dealing with Lavan, to learn the Torah of exile, to learn how to survive in a time when people are not all doing the same kind of thing. Right? How is he going to survive with Lavan? Right? The Torah of Avram and Yitzchak was not sufficient for this because they had a nice lifestyle comparatively where they were surrounded by people. Skipping it to the end of the third line. Yaakov knew, or they all knew, from the time of Bris Bein Abisarim, from the covenant between the pieces, God said that your children are going to be exiled in a land not theirs for 400 years. So they knew exile was coming. Yaakov knew it was going to be one of his kids who was going to go into exile. Halo tzarich Yaakov lachin et banav legalot zo. Yaakov had to prepare his children for this exile. Akocha hadio ken al menash yedu ki aleim lachin et zman l'chayak. Galut, fine. Kevin Yosef hayazeh shitgalal svivat harishayim hatzrich lamod levado neged kol nisyonot sheamdu lo. Yaakov knew that Yosef, I don't know how he knew, but Yosef would be the one who would have to go to Egypt to be all by himself in a country where everyone else was doing things differently than he was doing. He would have to remain firm in his faith, stay strong in his connection to God, to the values of Yaakov, of Yitzchak, of Avram, and therefore Yaakov needed to teach him the Torah of the nighttime, the Torah of exile, so that he could stand firm. The other brothers all came down together. They set up yeshivas, they set up schools, they set up all the kosher shops, they had rest, everything you wanted, they had all there. They were all there, their own community, in a separate part of Egypt. Everything was great. Yosef was the one who had to learn and deal with everybody being different than him and everyone doing their own thing. So when it says the Torah of the nighttime, it means the Torah of Galus, the Torah of exile. So what is the Torah of exile? I think that at times of calamity in Jewish history, at times when there was a dead end of where we're going, at times when people didn't know what was happening, at times of Tisha B'Av, there was a new recreation of Torah Shebaal Peh. The destruction of the first temple led to the men of the Great Assembly, and the invention of rabbinic rules with Ezra and the Anshei Kodesh HaGedolah. The destruction of the Second Temple led to the Mishnah, and ultimately the Gemara. At different times of tragedy, the expulsion from Spain, also on Tisha B'Av, led to the writing of the Shulchan Aruch, and the explosion of Kabbalah in Tzfat a few years later. At times of tragedy, we have new flowerings of Torah Shebaal Peh. New ways of understanding the Torah. The Torah Shebichtav is unable to adapt quickly enough, unable to change, to meet challenges, to meet the things that are going to happen. When we have crisis, we need new ways of dealing with the world. We need new kinds of Torah Shebaal Peh, new kinds of ways of relating to God. Right? Instead of relating to God through the Chumash, which is fixed, the Tanakh canonized, doesn't change. We now have a changing Torah, an evolving Torah, which allows us, with every mitzvah and every mitzvah drabanan, to connect to God in a new and unique and individual way. So that when we're in exile, when we are sent out from the Beis HaMikdash, when we're sent out from Eretz Yisrael, when it's a time of night, when things are really bad, and we don't know what's going to happen, and we can't see, and it doesn't make any sense, the political situation is terrible, when you read the newspapers, and one thing after another, just it's worse and worse. The only good thing that happened actually this week in the news, I don't know if you saw this, very important thing, is New Zealand got 10 centimetres closer to Eretz Yisrael. There was an earthquake pushed. South Island, New Zealand, 10 centimetres closer. So they're making Aliyah very, very slowly. Of course, the flip side is they also got closer to Australia, so that's a problem. But anyway, things don't make any sense. Things are really bad. We can't see where we're going. We can't possibly see how we're going to get back to where we're supposed to be. How, I mean, it makes no sense. Nothing really adds up. We don't know where we're going. That's a time when we need Torah Shabbat. That's a time when we need Torah of the night. It's a time when we need to connect to God through a personal relationship with God, which is what the Torah Shebaal Peh allows us to do, to connect in unique and individual ways to God. Also, on a very simple level, it's a time when we should be learning Torah at night. We now have longer nights, and we are able to spend a bit of time at night learning Torah. And I guess I'd like to give a plug for the evening kollel over here, where people have the opportunity to learn Torah. And now is the time to do it. And this is the way to undo the problems of Tisha B'Av and prepare for the correction of all of these sins and prepare for the future when Mashiach will come, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, all through learning Torah of the night, learning Torah at night. Chut Shel Chesed will be stretched out to us from Shemayim. Rav Tzadok says something really interesting, just to close this up, which is what happened on Tisha B'Av when there was a Beis HaMikdash. How did people commemorate the ninth of Av during the time of the second temple? The first temple, second temple, were they happy, were they sad? What were they doing? We know that in the third temple, at the time of the third temple, the fast days, which were now our sad days, will be turned into days of Sason v'simcha, of happiness, be festivals. And we learn the source that Avelus, that Shiva, is 7 days from this idea. If you look in source number 16, the Gemara Moed Katan says, Minayin Avelus Shiva, how do we know that Avelus is 7 days long? Dechtiv, it says in Amos, Hafachti chagechem la'avel, I will turn, when I destroy the Beis HaMikdash, I'll turn your festivals into times of mourning. So Ma Chag Shiva, just as Chag, which refers to Sukkot, as we all know, Sukkot is 7 days long. Avelut Shiva, so Avelus is 7 days. The Gemara says, wait a second, Sukkot is really 8 days long. No, it's not, because Shemini Atzeret is a day by itself. And maybe it's only 1 day like Shavuot. 7 days we learn from Chag. Rav Tzadok HaKohen says an amazing idea, which is just it's so brilliant and it just must be true. He says, why are we learning from Sukkot? What's the connection between Sukkot and Avelus? Doesn't really make any sense. He says, Nira Shahaya Chag Zayin Yamim. It seems, to Rav Tzadok, that they had a festival on Tisha B'Av in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, which was a 7-day festival. Shaya Mitisha B'Av Ad Tu B'Av. From the 9th of Av for 7 days until Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av was the last day of Yom Tov. I'm going to turn your festivals into mourning. Which festival was turned into a day of mourning? Tisha B'Av. That's the simple meaning of Amos. And from there we learn that 7 days of Avelus from the 7-day festival they used to have in the Beis HaMikdash. Shibiyom chasun asoy chozer al yom kippurim shuzman nesinas luchot shniyot. Kibur Rashi says to Tzadok that the two happiest days of the year are Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the day when the second tablets were given. So therefore Yom Kippur is the antidote to Shavas Arba Tammuz, when the first tablets were smashed. From 70 the Tammuz to Yom Kippur, we have the destruction and the rebuilding and the antidote, the cure. Right, and that's in Yom Shabiyom Chasunato in the pasuk in Shir Hashim. Aval biyom Simchas Libo ze binyan beis hamigdash yivne b'mehirah v'yameinu. That's Chozer al Tu B'Av. He says that the antidote to Tisha B'Av, which is the destruction of the temple, is that on Tu B'Av the temple will be rebuilt. Right? That's the we have an A B B A structure. Shivas Arba Tammuz destruction, Tisha B'Av destruction, Tu B'Av reconstruction, and Yom Kippur reconstruction. La'atid Yer Tu B'Av, the base image is going to be rebuilt on Tu B'Av, which is the last day of the 7-day festival from Tisha B'Av to Tu B'Av. Matzina smichud lezeh b'psikta, and he finds a support for this in the psikta. Rav Kahana, the Yidusham says, Mibnei Beis HaMikdash HaRishon, Nechrav v'mazal Aryeh. The first base image was destroyed in the constellation, the zodiac sign of Leo, of Aryeh. Ze'av, which is the month of Av, va'al yidei Aryeh by a lion, Zev Nebuchadnezzar. Av beis hamikdash latid lavo yafoi Aryeh. A lion is going to rebuild the third beis hamikdash, Ze'ah Kodesh Baruch Hu. That refers to God. Ve'yivne et beit hamikdash b'mazal Aryeh. He's going to rebuild it in the month of the lion, which is Av. U'b'vadai s'rov tzadak ha'mekuvan al yom chamisha asa ba'av. It must be that the day that the beis hamikdash will be rebuilt would be the 15th of Av, which is the antidote, which is the undoing of all the destruction of the 9th of Av. So therefore, in the 9th of Av, if Mashiach doesn't come, I hope he will. If he's not, we'll be sitting and crying and mourning the destruction. But only 7 days later, we'll be celebrating the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We're celebrating the fact that we have a chance to undo all of the destruction caused by the destruction of Tisha B'Av. We'll be celebrating the fact that we can learn Torah at night, that we can find a way through the tragedies that come with us at all times. We can find a path to get back to God, even though we're exiled, we've come from all four corners of the earth. We have people over the world, we're coming back to Eretz Yisrael, coming back to rebuild the country, to rebuild Judaism, to rebuild ourselves. And therefore, Tu B'Av is the day when we're all going to go out to greet Mashiach together. Amen.